Hello, everyone, and welcome to Connectivity episode 254. I am your host, John Reardon, and I am joined today, as always, by Neil Ronahan.
Yeah, we take a week off, and you don't even know what episode number it is. I could hear that hint of
We just talked about it, and then I started saying it. I'm like, was that the right one? And it was, So we're four episodes in. I'm already lost. But luckily, we've made it to the end of 2020. Neil, can you believe we've been doing this show for a whole year already?
I mean, technically, if we go back to when it started, this is like our 10th anniversary.
Those don't count. Those aren't canon. That's Connectivity Legends.
That's Legend. The Connectivity Legends, this is the new canon. We were bought by Disney. Yeah. You know, it's how it goes.
We were bought by Microsoft.
Yeah. Like the one where we do the Star Fox parody, like that's still canon. But like newscast is old EU.
Anyway, it's the end of 2020. And so me and Neil are going to take a look back at the remarkably full and busy and varied game schedule and some of our favorite releases. We're going to talk about the year from the only optimistic angle you can look at it, which is that we stayed inside and played some video games.
Yeah, like when all is said and done,
yeah,
like it was a good year for video games. Maybe not the best year ever. Like some of the bigger things either had a stigma attached to it or got delayed. But from the indie perspective, like it was a fantastic year for games. We got a lot of good things.
I feel like I found a lot of things that I might not have played in a regular year.
Yep.
That I was able to put more time into because of how the world was this year.
Yeah, like I basically got into Xbox because of the pandemic.
Early on during all of this, I did question whether the Series X and the PS5 were actually going to come out this holiday because it seemed like such a crazy thing to do given what was going on. But I guess they kind of came out. Like, I think five people got them, so.
It is funny having some friends that are trying to get like PS5s and Series X's now. There's been some victories, but it's a lot of losses. The war still rages on as people try to get these consoles.
I'm gonna wait. And the longer I wait, the less interested I become in the PS5. So that's good. I now am really only looking at getting one of them, which is saving me money.
The funny thing is that like I still really want to play Astro's Playroom, just not like $500 want to play Astro's Playroom.
I don't think I finished the VR one, and I liked the VR one, so if I get that hankering, I'll just play that.
Yeah, like I've kind of settled on the point, I will eventually get a PlayStation 5, but I am in no rush. I'm very content with my Series X right now.
Yeah, that's kind of the consensus I've heard from a lot of people actually this time around, is being a bit more positive on the Series X than on the PS5.
I feel like if you were to ask for the podcasts, you would get a different response every time.
That's fair. From the people I know who are not aggressive fanboys on either side, the consensus seems to be leaning Xbox for now, but that could change.
So I have 30. I have 30 games on my top list.
I don't know. Okay, yeah, we were talking about this before we started. Neil, so like earlier this week, we were like, actually like last week when we were skipping an episode, we were like, yeah, next week we can just do kind of like our game of the year thing, and I was like, oh, okay, I know a couple games that I can talk about. And we get on this call and Neil immediately goes, all right, I have like a list of 25 games. And I'm like, but I'm not ready. So enjoy Neil's curated list while I scramble through the things that I played this year.
Yeah, so I've gotten in the habit of doing like let's do a top 10 for the year, top 25, however many games I kind of felt I played. And I kept on doing that for, I think I started in 2012 or 2013. Because I remember like Kid Icarus Uprising was on one of the first ones that I found. I could probably, as a bonus at the end of this, I might be able to find like unedited from 2013, my top games list from that year. And I can see how much I disagree with past Neil. But yeah, I've done it. I think this is the third or fourth year I've done it in a Google Sheet where just as I kind of play a game that I like, I will go on and like add it to my list and kind of like sort it as the year goes through, and like games will fall off. Like periodically I'll kind of like examine a game again and be like, you know what? Like a month or two after this game, I don't like it as much, or like I'm way higher on this. Like Animal Crossing was one that I probably had lower, and just as I kept playing it, it kept on rising, because it was like, well, I have a lot of problems with this game, but I've put 200 hours into it, so who am I to complain?
Whereas I am currently using my Open Critic list of things I've reviewed and have just scrolled back to the beginning of the year.
So I'll try to tackle some of my stuff.
We're equally organized.
Yeah, we balance out. I'll try to tackle some of my stuff and go through it relatively quickly. So I have I have a top 25 that is, I guess, games that I'd term as new to me. And I think all of them are... I have five port honorable mentions that I will just rattle off. The Double Dragon and Kunio-kun collection that came out on Switch back in February. There was like a Japanese physical version, I think, that came out sometime in 2019. That is largely here not because of the games are good, but because it is a really, really cool historical curiosity of a collection that like translated a lot of different games that I'd never really seen translated. And the Kunio-kun games are kind of fascinating in just like how wide and variety they all were. I mean, most of them are just like beat 'em ups in the vein of River City Ransom, but then there's like the sports games and like the, you know, Crash and the Boys and stuff like that. Then we got Fantasy Zone Sega Ages, which if you haven't played Fantasy Zone, that's a dope ass game. I highly recommend playing that game. And the Sega Ages version that came out at the beginning of 2020 is fantastic. I think I gave it a 9 out of 10 in my review of it. So you can go read that on NintendoWorldReport.com if you want to find out more specifics about Fantasy Zone. The next one is
Fantasy Zone. Is that the side-scrolling shooter?
Yeah, the one where like you need to like shoot down. Like there's a bunch of bases on the map that you need to shoot down, and it kind of...
I definitely heard you say shoot down babies.
Yeah, shoot.
And I was like, we're thinking of different games.
That's Blackbird. There's a game by Onion Games, who they will appear on my top 25 with their game Moon Remix RPG Adventure, or whatever the weird subtitle they gave that game. But Onion Games basically did a Fantasy Zone game that... it came out in 2019 on Switch. I highly recommend that one because it is that side-scrolling shooter that plays almost exactly like Fantasy Zone, except for the background music is like opera in a made-up language, and the plot is that like a little girl dies on the street and then comes back as a vengeful blackbird and just shoots down. It's, I don't know, it's weird. It's real weird.
Yeah, I remember that one coming up in Game of the Year talk. Was that a year ago or 2 years ago?
Yeah, I think it was 2019.
Yeah.
That's Fantasy Zone's great. Star Wars Episode One Racer, because we have to mention Star Wars every episode of this show.
Of course.
I thought it was... I don't know if Episode One Racer is like the best port I've ever seen, but it's just really cool that Episode One Racer is on a modern platform.
That game has aged better. The port is very bare bones, and that game has just aged very well.
Yeah.
Apparently, I reviewed it, and I gave it an 8 out of 10.
Yeah, I assume that might be on your list.
Apparently, it is. It's not on the page I was looking at, but it is on there.
And then my next two are more recent ones. One that I actually talked about last episode, Collection of Saga, the Final Fantasy Legend Game Boy games coming to Switch. It's a really nice collection of three RPGs for $20. And then Pikmin 3 Deluxe, which... like, it's just Pikmin 3. I don't think the bonus content is really that great. Like, the fact that you can do the full game in co-op is awesome. But overall, Pikmin 3 is just an excellent game. And, yeah, there's... like, I wish there was online multiplayer and bingo battle and everything. But I really enjoyed replaying that game. And it's nice. I hope people that missed out on the first time around actually got to play through it this time. Because it's on a system that, you know, more than 12 people own. My port honorable mentions. We still got 25 top games to go through.
Pikmin has the same problem for me as Hyrule Warriors does now, in that I played it a bunch on the review copy that wasn't on my account, and I haven't gone back and started it on my actual account yet.
Yeah, no, that's what Hyrule Warriors...
which is a problem
after,
I seem to be encountering a lot.
Yeah, after beating it on the staff account, since I talked about Hyrule Warriors on the show... I've not gone back to Hyrule Warriors. Turns out, playing like 50 hours of that game, you'll get tired of it.
And I know from how many times I've come back to the first one that if I just if I just give it a few months, I'm gonna want to play it again, and then I'll just go back to it then. And
I've been very close to like there have been a couple times where I'm like, I could just go in and do a couple missions, because I am at the point where like I've almost beaten it again, but I can totally just go in there and do some grinding to like, you know, unlock some different, you know, some of like the different moves and weapons and stuff. And I mean, that's how I'll probably revisit that game. I really do hope they add DLC. It doesn't, like, it seems like inevitable that they will. They've done that with basically every major game except for Super Mario Party for some reason. But I hope they add DLC, because the DLC for Hyrule Warriors was excellent.
Yes. Yeah, and this, I mean, I can't imagine they won't. It's Koei Tecmo, and it's a Warriors game. If I don't have... At least they'll at least add more clothing options for every character.
And those couple like villains and side characters that have like pictures and portraits in the game but aren't playable, they will be playable. That's how this game works. So do you want to rattle off some games, or should I rattle off like my 21 through 25?
I'll rattle off some games here. I'm not going to put them in any particular order except for like maybe my top two. I'm gonna go by release date. So I'm gonna start at the beginning of the year. With where did it go? This, I mean, technically a couple here that are, they've been out before, but like you, they're new to Switch. So Darksiders Genesis came out on Switch in February. And I had already played it on PC, but the Switch port was fantastic. And I loved it. And then also Doom 64, which I will die on the hill of saying that is the best of the classic style Doom games. And the Switch version and all of the fresh ported versions fix my only real problem with the original, which was that you couldn't see anything even if you were playing on a CRT, because it was just too dark.
Yeah, I bought Doom 64 when it came out, because it was only $5. I have not actually played that on Switch. I played it back in the day on N64, and I have a lot of great memories with it. So does my wife, which is part of the reason why I just bought it sight unseen. But she has not had the urge to go relive some childhood memories. And Darksiders Genesis is on my Xbox Game Pass to playlist, because I kind of don't know if I, like, as I read your review and talked to you about it, I think I might like that game a lot. I also think it might be, like most Darksiders games, where it's just, like, a little bit too combat-focused for what I usually like. Like, that's the thing. It's, like, the first Darksiders game, I think, is really strong. I just, like, as far as, like, when they do the Zelda puzzles and the dungeons, that's great. And then there's just so much focus on combat, and that's where it kind of lost me a little bit.
The first one especially, and I think they got better at the with the second one, but the first one especially, I don't think they were super confident in their ability to make good Zelda puzzles, which they did. They made great Zelda puzzles, and I think they fall back on the combat as a safety net.
Yeah, they're like, well, we think this is strong.
Yeah, they don't do it as much in the second one, and then in the third one, they go back into combat, but they make the combat better, which helps. But yeah, Darksiders Genesis is way more of... I don't think it's like Diablo. I would put it more in the category of like Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3, which is a bit less of an RPG than something like Diablo is. It's a bit more just a top-down hack and slash, but with those RPG and Zelda elements. And then this isn't a port, it's a remake. And I only gave it a 7.5 at the time, but it's gotten better since then, which is Panzer Dragoon Remake. I get the impression this may have came out a little bit earlier than the developer planned on it coming out.
It seems like
out,
it was probably possibly? Rushed out for... Because it shadow dropped after a direct. So it might have been like, okay, we have this opportunity to shadow drop. We need to have the game be ready now no matter what.
Yeah, because there were some... There were things... Like, one of the things they announced really early on was that it was going to have an alternate soundtrack, which Panzer Dragoon has a fantastic soundtrack in its original form, but the original composer was coming back... and they were redoing or rearranging the soundtrack. And that came out, but it was like a month later. They've since then also added level zero, which is like just a straight up kind of shooting gallery level without a lot of dodging, which is something that was in the original game. And then they've also added in performance and graphics modes. So you can get it up to 60 frames per second if you want to, or have it look prettier if you want to, which are both nice additions. And I think most of my complaints that I had in the review, they have now fixed. So it is now a much better game than what I reviewed it as.
I should go back to it then, because I didn't enjoy the Switch port as much when it first came out.
It's one of those games. It's easy. Like, every time they put out an update, and they've put out a bunch of updates for it. Every time they put one out, I kind of just go, I'll hop back in, because it's a rail shoot. It's like an hour long.
Yeah.
So I usually just hop back in and play through it again. But I love that game, and I don't know how this one did. I get the impression that maybe it didn't do fantastic, but it would be super awesome if they could remake the second one. Because unlike the first one, which was available via Panzer Dragoon Orta, which you could play on your Xbox Series X.
Hey.
In Panzer Dragoon Orta, you could unlock the first game. They have never, as far as I know, re-released the second one. So it would be nice to get a remaster of that one, because I've never played it. Let's see. Ion Fury, I liked. It was a first-person shooter in the style of Duke Nukem. Nothing huge to say there, but then also I'll do one more and then I'll hand it back to you for a bit. Real Mist on Switch is great. It's Mist, and Mist is cool. If you haven't played Mist, you should play Mist, because Mist is a great game, and Real Mist is a good version of Mist, though I don't think maybe the original creators of Mist like Real Mist very much. I do. So there.
All right, so number 25. I can probably go pretty quickly through some of these. Voxelgram, which is indie Picross 3D. Like, it's not... Picross 3D is definitely better on the DS, just because you have the two screens and the touchscreen on the bottom. I think Voxelgram does a good enough job of replicating it, but it's still a little rough. Like, that's why it's at 25. There's also, there's, like, procedurally generated Picross 3D puzzles, which is really cool. Number 24 is PGA Tour 2K21, or 2K21.
That is how everyone says it, yes.
But anyway, nice to see a good golf game on Switch. The whole thing with this is it used to be, like, the golf club golf game, and then, you know, 2K... partnered with that company to make PGA Tour 2K21, and it's rough on Switch. Like, they have stuff where, like, there's no crowds, which I don't think they planned on being prescient in the year of COVID. And it crashed on me a couple times, and it's really rough around the edges. I actually haven't gone back to it in a while. Maybe they had some updates. I know they did have one update shortly after launch that did seem to smooth it out a little bit. It was still not perfect. But just the feel of golf, and they have, like, a course creator in there that is, like, weirdly, I expected it to be either, like, really crappy or gibberish. And they actually made a kind of elegant way for you to, like, you know, make your own course. Like, it definitely would be better on PC, just because it is, like, you know, there's a lot of fiddly bits. But it's a really good golf game. I recommend it. Maybe not for the, like, I forget exactly what full price was for that, but maybe wait for a sale, because it is rough on Switch, or play it on a different system, maybe. I don't know exactly how the versions of the game on other systems were, you know, on a technical level, but it's a very well-playing game. Number 23 is Spiritfarer, which is a game that I've yet to beat, because the idea of playing that game for like 30 hours seems exhausting. I think it's beautiful and I like a lot of the gameplay. I just don't feel like spending 30 hours with it, but I enjoyed the like 5 to 10 hours that I spent with it. Number 22 is Streets of Rage 4, which is a game that I thought I would like a lot more than I actually did. The online works surprisingly well on Switch. There's actually, I think you can look at some video footage of Jared and I when the game came out playing online, and like it was a ton of fun and really good. I wound up playing it online a couple times throughout like the first week or two it was out, and it's a beautiful game. It plays, it feels like Streets of Rage. I think what I learned with this is that you know, Streets of Rage is fun. It's not like my favorite game ever. The soundtrack's awesome, and it is a really great game. It's just, for me, it's a beat 'em up.
That's one that I played with you at PAX, I think, and I really liked it, and I haven't gone back to pick it up since then.
Yeah, especially if you can like play it with a friend, whether it's locally or online. Like,
I don't have friends, Neil, so that's not going to work. But I will just
put a controller in your cat's hand.
That'll work. She'll fall asleep on it.
Just be going right.
Yeah.
It is really great. I feel like it came out. You know, I think it was like April 1st, so it was like kind of as COVID was rearing up. I feel like it got lost in the shuffle, and that's a shame. I hope it sold well, because I really like that group of developers working on that game, because, you know, part of them worked on that Wonder Boy remake, which really blew me away when it came out early on in the Switch's life. I hope Sega just keeps on giving these guys retro franchises to either remake or make new sequels to.
They do a good job, and they're, I assume some portion of the art team is the same as Wonder Boy, because both that and Streets of Rage 4 have incredible art design.
Yeah, like I forget the exact breakdown of Streets of Rage 4, because it's like, I think that it's the art team that kind of carried over from Wonder Boy to Streets of Rage, and then they're like, some of the developers were from, was it Guard Crush, who worked on another similar game, a similar beat 'em up.
But yeah,
my memory is that on is fuzzy, because PAX East, I probably played a demo of it and talked to people who worked on it as we like didn't touch each other, because people like, there's this thing, we don't really know what it is, but we'll just bump elbows and leave.
It'll probably be fine. See you next year.
Yeah. See you at GDC. Oh, they canceled GDC while we're here. Number 21 is What the Golf, which is just a really daffy, delirious game that brought me a lot of joy when it came out on Switch in May. It was a good game to play kind of while a pandemic was happening. Because it is just like, it's a really kind of, it definitely shows its origins as being somewhat of a mobile game. I know some people say that like a bad word, but it's just more that like, it is a relatively simplistic input of you're hitting a golf ball into a hole, but then they just do all sorts of weird, insane things with it along the way, that really like it wrinkles your brain a lot. I really like What the Golf. Should I keep going for a little bit more?
You want me to? I can throw in a couple here.
Sure.
Let's see. I'm gonna do Journey to the Savage Planet, which I super loved. It might kind of be in the same category as PGA, where if Switch performance doesn't bother you, then by all means enjoy the Switch version. If Switch performance does bother you, then maybe play it somewhere else. But regardless, it is Metroid Prime meets Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And it is just delightful and honestly hilarious. The one problem I remember having with it is that it does not have a map. And no Metroidvania, 3D or 2D, should ever go without a map. And that should be part of the certification process. And then I'll also do Ancestor's Legacy, which is a real-time strategy game on Switch, a medieval squad-based real-time strategy game that I actually really liked and was surprised by. That's RTS is probably one of the few genres where I feel like it's pretty much only fit for PC. So it's always a little, usually if those games come out on consoles, they are gimped in some way or totally different. But this one, they actually did a really good job with the interface. They simplified stuff in smart places, and it's probably the best RTS game I've ever played in a console.
Wow.
And it does a little bit to scratch that Age of Empires itch while I'm not on a PC.
That's high praise for Ancestor's Legacy.
I mean, it's not a high bar. I mean, the console RTS field is very
I remember
terrible.
Civ, I mean, Civ Rev
StarCraft
64. Yeah, or well, I guess Civ. Yeah. Civ Rev is that technically not an RTS or?
It's borderline. I haven't played that one. Aren't the Civilization games are somewhat turn-based,
yeah,
though, right?
Yeah. No, I realized so that after I said
not
it.
Necessarily real time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I joke, but StarCraft 64 is a pretty good port. It's that's one of the better ones. But then you have stuff like, Army Men RTS and Tom Clancy's Endgame and stuff like that that are just garbage on console. But you go back to yours because you have way more than I do.
All right, so number 20 is Sukuna of Rice and Ruin. Which is a game that
looked cool.
I cut the video review for it for Zach Miller, and I think Zach liked it a lot more than I did, which I'm not really that surprised by, like, just knowing the kinds of games that he likes versus the kind of games that I do. The, like, growing rice in this game is something that is, they do a very good job of, it's difficult to completely fail, but it's kind of like a little open-ended enough that it takes a lot of, like, you need to learn the systems to do it perfectly. Like, so it's like, it's that thing where, like, you'd have to go out of your way to just completely ruin the entire crop, but to do it really well, like, you need to, like, learn every aspect inside and out, which, I'd say maybe they don't do the best job of explaining that all to you, but I also think there's a part of it, a part of the enjoyment is kind of, like, realizing the different aspects of rice growing and then doing what I did and like Google what the process for rice growing is and realize like, oh, they did their homework. Like they got this right.
Yeah.
And then a lot of the interactions with the characters and your like, you know, your town and your farm that you're kind of growing up, like that, like the writing is really good. It's a very good localization. And then there's a lot of, like side scrolling Muramasa esque combat that I think is kind of just okay. It's a little bit like too, maybe punitively difficult might be the good term for it, because there's also like kind of a day-night cycle and a hunger system. So you can go out to these levels and it'll be like you could be in the middle of a level and it'll just be like, oh, you're hungry and it's nighttime. You better get out or else you're just going to die. and like that seemed to happen too often. And I don't think it was the kind of thing like I was playing the game totally wrong. I think it's just the way it's structured, which, like, still a very fun game, and I'm kind of, I guess, focusing more on the negative, but overall, like, it's beautiful, the rice growing is incredible, the writing's really strong, and the side-scrolling combat is probably the weakest link, but it's still pretty fun for what it is.
Yeah, yeah, that one looked not necessarily like my type of game, but yeah, watching the video review of that, it was a game that I hadn't seen much coverage for in advance, so I was kind of surprised by how interesting it actually looked.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I always saw, like, the side-scrolling combat and was like, oh, I guess it's just like Muramasa. And then I read a little more of it after it kind of... It had an E3 where it was kind of, like, very surprising and fun. Mm-hmm. And then I saw more of the rice-growing stuff, and I'm like, oh. Like, that's not just like, oh, it's a Harvest Moon game and you fight stuff. It's not like, oh, we made another Rune Factory. Like, no, this was legitimately... It's a hard game to just map a comparison to.
Yeah.
So my number 19 is Super Crush KO, which is from the guys who made Graceful Explosion Machine. Vertex mm-hmm. Pop is the name of that developer. They also put out the game We Are Doomed this year, which is, I think that was their first game. That's kind of more of like a bite-sized high score shooter. But Super Crush KO... takes a lot of, if you remember Graceful Explosion Machine, which was like a high mm-hmm. score chasing, like side-scrolling shoot 'em up. Super Crush KO takes a lot of that element, but it basically just plays like Beautiful Joe. Like I think actually talking to the developer, like he's a big fan of Bayonetta and just wanted to make a 2D Bayonetta. And that's kind of what this game plays yeah. like. It's really fun. It's one that I haven't gone back to, and I'm almost surprised that I haven't, because I had such a blast kind of romping through that game, and then you can go back, and it's got good online leaderboards, like, good functionality with that. Maybe I'll see if any friends who played this game and try to beat their high scores at some point, because there's definitely a fun element of that, of, like, linking your combos together. You're rewarded for doing like a variety of attacks, which is something that I think is important in a combo system, because you can just like spam the really good thing over and over again. Mm-hmm. But this is, you know, you get points for doing a wider variety of moves and abilities.
I think that was one that you and maybe Matt played at PAX, and I remember hearing the pitch of you guys, like both of you guys telling me like, yeah, they want to make Bayonetta, but in 2D, and just be like, what? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that was
but
a demo
both
that
super
I
high on it.
I kept on just going back to that demo kiosk and playing it throughout that PAX.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I already like, I really liked Graceful Explosion Machine, so I wasn't really that surprised like that. Oh, they made another game and I like it, but it surprised me how much I liked it.
Yeah.
Number 18 is Windbound, which is a game that I kind of only played because we had the opportunity to have a like a PC preview of it. So I was like, all right, no one else is really around to do this. I think like someone else was going to, but then they had like computer trouble or something. So I was like, all right, I'll play through this game, and I played through it.
What that was? You did. We got Windbound
and Ari,
Ari and the Secret of Seasons at the same time, and I think we just each took one. And you may have chosen better.
Yeah. And it's funny because Ari seemed really great, and then it came out. But Windbound kind of lived up to the hype. So I would say it might be like too hard, but maybe not, because it does offer like a flexibility in difficulty, because it is, I guess I could say it in a way in that like it's roguelike Breath of the Wild, sort of.
Kind of?
Yeah. Yeah. Like kind of. Like, you just start on this island, and then, you know, you start getting, you know, get materials, get resources, and you're on an island, and you get to a point where you basically need to, like, you know, you can swim a little bit to another island, and you get to, like, a point there, and then you're given, like, a magical ore or something, and then you can make a boat, like, you learn the recipe to make a boat, and then you go, and you have to look for, basically, across an unmapped water, you need to go find three towers that then you have to activate. And then you activate those, and then you have to find, like, the kind of, I guess, like, the exit temple of that map. And then leave. And then there's, at the end of every chapter, you kind of have to, like, you want to have your boat kind of geared up. Because then there will be, you have to, like, there's a straightforward bit where you basically have to like sail through a storm. And it does a lot of like, you know, environmental storytelling and stuff like that. Like you kind of, there's stuff that you can try to pick up on. I didn't really figure out all of it because I was more there just for the excitement of the raw gameplay, which is that you're kind of powerless. You need to make sure you eat food. You need to find resources. Sometimes, you know, you could be on a run and find a lot of great resources that will help you make a really cool weapon, or you won't, and you're flying by the skin of your teeth. And the difficulty settings, there is, I think they call it, like, survivalist and storyteller. Survivalist is, you know, like, the enemies are a little harder, and if you die, you start all the way back at square one. With, like, I think there's some things carry over.
You keep, because you get upgrades after those, like, straightforward obstacle course segments at the end of each chapter. You get an upgrade, and I think you keep those upgrades in future runs.
Yeah, which those are like modifiers where it'll be like, oh, like, you know, money will be easier to find or something like that.
Yeah.
And then the other mode, storyteller, where in that one, it's if you die, you start at the beginning of the chapter that you were on, and you basically keep everything that was in your inventory. Which, like, that's what I primarily played, but I did actually mess around with Survivalist when I was reviewing it, and it was still hard, but I just became more combat-averse when I played Survivalist, because that would usually lead to a swift death, which I think I can kind of understand why maybe the design intent of that game is to make it more difficult, because I think some of the mechanics blossom better when you're combat-averse. And then when you
it's not a hard game either. Like it's just that everything you encounter is better at killing you than you are at killing it.
Until I did have a couple runs where I was just very, very powerful and was able, like, I never beat some of really large animals, but like some of the ones that like did kill me at one point, I was able to kind of get the drop on. It's one that they had a lot of free updates that they were going to put in post-launch that I haven't really gone back to. So maybe I'll check that out. I almost want to look up to see what they are, because I think some of them... And then there was more that was supposed to be coming at the end of the year, but I think there might be like a story update or something that is like early 2021 or something like that. But it's a really cool game that I super recommend. Talking about it here, I feel like I need to move it up the list because I forgot how much I just enjoyed playing that game.
Yeah, that's one that I would probably... I bought it pure... So it's funny. I find that when I'm reviewing games, it's very rare for me to actually go out and buy a game. I only play what I'm reviewing, but that's one where I saw your review and was like, I'm going to go play that.
It's really cool.
So I need to finish it.
Yeah, so I'll make 17 and 16 real quick. 17 is Manifold Garden, which I am compromised in saying too much critically, because you know, personal friend and friend of the site, Seren McNulty, was a producer on this game. This is the one where we had a review go up on the site. I did not touch it with a 10-foot pole, but it's a really, really mind-bending puzzle game that looks beautiful. The Switch port is tremendous. I think if I had one knock about it, it's easy to get lost in that game just because of the way the visuals are. But as long as you don't get lost, the puzzles are really fun. There's a lot of variety in it. And it's just like a really tight 4 or 5 hour game.
Yeah.
Number 16 is Pixel Puzzle Makeout League, because that's me. I am the one who likes the Picross. I guess in the Picross rankings, this is number 2. It's weird that I would consider, like, the Picross S games are probably better than, you know, Voxelgram or Pixel Puzzle Makeout League, or the, if you think about it too hard, the very obvious game that is higher on this list. Like, the Picross S games are very, like, they're very well done, but they're not exciting. Like, I am, because it's more Picross to play, but, like, I wouldn't consider them one of the games of the year, because it's just kind of more of the same. But Pixel Puzzle Makeout League, I think the Picross might actually be the, I'm not going to say the worst part of the game, but the Picross is totally fine. I think it has some of the better like user interface of a Picross game that I've played. Like it's very smartly designed in that way, but there's surprisingly not as much Picross as I expected. It is most purely like a visual novel, but it also does some really insane storytelling things. Like, I guess I will say this only to sell people on it, because I think it is a cool reveal. If you are planning to play Pixel Puzzle Makeout League and wish to remain unspoiled, skip a minute ahead in the podcast. 3, 2, 1. So at least in one of the storylines, and I think it shows up in a couple of other things, there's like a fake MMO that you just play. And it's like, I forget what it's called, okay, but it's just something where like you're like this, it's like this miserable looking like 90s polygonal MMO that like they still work in the Picross stuff, like, but like you're like going around, it's like one of the characters that you're trying to date is a big fan of the game, so like you're just going around this fake MMO and like controlling this like weird polygonal jaguar or something. And it's just, and it does that, it does a couple things like that throughout the story that are just insane. And I really appreciate what they do with the storytelling in that game.
All right, so back, I think it's my turn. Next, I will do The Last Campfire.
I still need to play that.
It's very good.
I have it.
I think the first place I heard this was in the comments section of the video review, but someone commented and they were like, "So is it like Captain Toad meets Zelda?" And I'm like, "Yes, that's exactly what it is." So if that sounds good to you, then you should play Last Campfire. It's from Hello Games, the developers of No Man's Sky. It has zero in common with that, except for its composer is the guy who has done the more recent No Man's Sky music. And the soundtrack is very good. If you listen to Original Sound Chat, they had it in their honorable mentions section, I think, or honorable because of you. It was somewhere in there. I know, but they listened to it and they liked it, Neil. I was just making good suggestions to my friends, Neil.
Well, I mean, I still need to play. I will say, I bought this game on your right, much like Windbound.
Like, yeah,
bought this game.
Hey, I played Windbound though because I'm a better friend than you.
Oh.
Yeah, no, it's great. It has a few little performance hitches on Switch, but it looks really nice on Switch and essentially the same as it does everywhere else. So, unlike Journey to the Savage Planet, I can say just play it on Switch. It's a game that feels right at home, especially handheld. And it's a very chill, combat-free Zelda-like experience, and it's great. And the next one, which might be on your list, so sorry if I steal it from you, but it's Super Mario 3D All-Stars.
It's actually not.
Okay, well, great.
It would have fallen by my rules as a port honorable mention. And,
okay.
I don't think, like, I love those three games, and I'm happy that they were modern consoles. I don't think it's the best port.
Part of it, if you've seen our review, you know that this review is split up among three people. Neil, I believe you covered Mario 64, Jordan did Galaxy, and I did Mario Sunshine. I think I reviewed the most impressive port in this collection.
I mean, I thought the Mario 64 port was fine. Like, the subtle remaster of Mario 64.
That's listen. Everybody hated that video, so it doesn't matter. Everybody hated every video that I put out around the release of this game, whether positive or negative. People hated.
Yeah.
So we just won't worry about it.
There's things that I learned as I heard people just complain and complain about like all things 3D Mario except for Galaxy 2. Maybe my opinions on 3D Mario are different than the popular opinion.
I much like many people who are really big fans of Earthbound, I question how many of those people have actually played Galaxy 2. Because Galaxy 2 is fine.
Are we really gonna do this?
But it's objectively worse than the first Galaxy. And that's all we need to say.
So
send your emails to connectivity at NintendoWorldReport.com.
I guess my thing replaying Super Mario Galaxy, and I wound up just through, once again, we had the staff profile version and then my own personal version, that I actually didn't play that much of Galaxy because I was focusing on Mario 64. But I think on like my own personal version of 3D All-Stars, I think I'm like 70, 80 stars into it. It was like a thing that like I'd play a couple stars with the kid and kind of work my way through it. But there was also a game that I played when the start of quarantine, when my son just got really into watching me play Mario 64, started messing around with more 3D Marios. And like, I wish I could understand people who love Galaxy 2. I really do, because I just don't. Like, and it's like, I play Galaxy 1, and, like, the way it starts off, it's just, like, so big and epic and bombastic, and then you get into the hub world, which it's not perfect, but it just gives you that little bit of, like, connective tissue, and there's that moment when you can fly around it, and that's really fun, and, like, going to play Galaxy 2, like, I think Spaceship Mario is funny as a joke, and then you, like, actually kind of have to interact with it, and it's like a worse version of like the observatory, and then the point-to-point map just ruins any semblance of like congruency of the entire world. Like, it just, everything seems so disparate. It is a level pack, and it just feels like a level pack, and I don't even think I don't think the levels are bad. I think they are probably too long overall, at least from that was kind of my takeaway from going back to it. I don't really remember having that issue when I first played it, because I did enjoy the game when I played it. It's not like I hate Galaxy 2.
Sure, it's not bad.
I think that Yoshi is not fun to play as. I think it's on par and with, well, no, it's better than Yoshi and Sunshine, but that's also not a high bar to cross at all.
Well, and the difference there is, and we've talked about this before, but Yoshi is very likely the reason that Galaxy 2 isn't in 3D All-Stars.
Yeah. Yeah, because that heavily relies on the pointer.
Yeah, if you've played Galaxy with the touch controls while playing handheld, then you do not want Yoshi.
Yeah.
And if you don't know why, you haven't played Galaxy 2 recently.
Yeah. And, yeah, like, I don't enjoy playing as Yoshi in that game. I think some of the other power-ups are really cool. Like, I do remember there's, like, the light stuff that you play with. Mm-hmm. Like, they do really wild creative things, but it's just, on the whole, there's, like, I kind of like the, I don't know, purity. Is that the right term for Galaxy 1? Like, it feels like there's more of a through line going from world to world, from room to room with that, as opposed to Galaxy 2, where there's just like, I don't know, here's a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, Galaxy 1, they definitely feel like they have a vision for where they want to go. That vision includes, like, the entire presentation of the game, not just, like, mechanics.
Yeah.
And they execute on it so well. And then Galaxy 2 is, well, we should do that again. And there's no new vision there. It's just iterative, which is fine. They're good, but it's not... It can't compete with the original.
Yeah. To conclude, I will say that there is inherent hypocrisy in the fact that I really like Super Mario 3D Land, because that does a lot of things that annoy me in Galaxy 2. But, like, the fact that, like, it's just a point-to-point level map. Every level feels disconnected. And I actually think, kind of looking back on Super Mario 3D Land, I do remember, like, start being like, oh, I'm going to replay that a couple years ago. And I got super bored with that game. Super Mario 3D Land's back half is incredible. The first half of the game probably isn't that great.
So, and by back half, we mean you have to beat the game, and then it gets good. Yeah. I played through the first, like, three worlds of that recently to get footage, and yeah, the initial title to credits journey is pretty bland.
Yeah. Yeah, and, like, that's the one thing is I think a lot of my memories of that game are the back half, because that's where I think I kind of almost sleptwalked through playing the first half of the game.
Yeah.
And then got to the back half and was like, this is amazing! And maybe I look forward to Super Mario 3D World Deluxe coming to Switch, because that's another game that I really enjoyed when it came out, but I feel like as I've kind of ruminated on it, I've been a little more down on it than I expected. Like, I think I've said the thing that I like 3D Land more than 3D World, and I kind of posit that I might like 3D World more going back to it on Switch.
Yeah.
Then it might top 3D Land for me.
Yeah. Yeah, 3D World is just the pinnacle of everything that I hate that has changed about 3D Mario since 64. So
But they fixed it all with Odyssey.
I don't it's not bad. It's fine, but it's
But coming back to it, 3D All-Stars has three great games in it. One of the games is not as good as the others, and I will let you use your imagination as to which one that is.
Listen, Sunshine has, I will say, I think the controls for Sunshine in All-Stars are better than they were in the original, which is impressive, because that was the one where I was worried about their controls because of the triggers on the Switch being very different from the triggers on the GameCube. But now it's GameCube controller compatible, so you can play it the old way if you don't like change and can't improve yourself over time.
I think Sunshine is largely a great game. There's still a lot of, like, it's a game that probably would be really good with, like, a light touch of kind of smoothing over the rough edges. But I also love how sloppy it is.
All of them.
Yeah.
Like Mario 64, you can fall through the ground in all kinds of places in Mario 64 too. Like, it's just a video game that happens in, like, all of them.
But I also...
So, I don't know.
The movement. And it's wild going from... It's like, so Mario 64 to Sunshine, there's this through line of, in Sunshine, they expand upon the movement and things that Mario can do. And then after Sunshine, they were like, wait, let's make him do less. Because in Galaxy, you still have some movement, but they just restricted it and fine-tuned it so much that a lot of the sloppy, weird experimentation that's in Sunshine, which is it's really cool. It's maybe not intuitive, but all the things that you can do with Mario and Sunshine is incredible.
And it's very much the same line of thinking that gets them to Odyssey.
Yeah.
Which I would once again say Mario Odyssey is fun because it is a game about improving how Mario moves.
Yeah, and I think Odyssey owes a lot to Sunshine. And the people who hate on Sunshine need to put some respect on the fact that Sunshine's movement informed a lot of Odyssey.
Yeah. Also, the music is great.
Yeah.
You do some.
All right, so after talking about Windbound, I moved Windbound from 18th to 14th. So, the new number 16 is Trials of Mana, which is a really good action RPG that I should finish. It's got a really good soundtrack. I think it visually looks great. It seems to run very well on Switch. The voice acting might be a little suspect.
The voice acting is, I think, the thing that kept me from finishing
it. It's really bad. Maybe I'll kick it over to Japanese voice acting and maybe try to go through it again, but... I like that kind of comfort food. We're going to show you where to go next on the map. Nothing else really matters.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very light action RPG.
Number 15 is Mario Kart Live Home Circuit, which is a game I feel like I could have put higher on the list just by the fact that, like, I love the ingenuity of that game because it's like that application of... You know, having the cart, you know, the RC cart that you can set up a race and it uses AR and everything. Like, it's magic. It really is. Yeah. And I've seen it with, I got it for my niece and, like, seeing her and my brother mess around with it was really cool. I actually had, I have a picture of it that I will cherish. My in-laws came over, you know, masked up, of course, since that's the age that we're in. But... They did Christmas, you know, and I broke out Mario Kart Live, like, gave the controller to my kid, and he doesn't totally get it, but he was, like, just driving around as Mario. And at one point, he gave it to his grandpa, my father-in-law, who is not a dude who plays video games. Like, I kind of was like, oh, like, you know, and he'll probably, like, see in the car move around and everything. Like, he's a dude who, like, messes with motorcycles and stuff. And then, sure enough, after my son gave his grandpa the controller... Then it's just my father-in-law driving the cart around my living room and my son, like, giggling with him. It was a really touching, fun moment. That was without even setting up a race. And like, that's the kind of stuff that, like, I wonder if they're going to expand on this game, you know, over the ensuing years. Like, are we going to see more content? Are we going to see, you know, more than just Mario and Luigi as racers? I feel like there's a lot they can do with this. And I kind of hope we see more because I think the concept of it is so cool. And that's why it is 15th on my list. 14th is Windbound.
Talk about it again.
Yeah. Number 13 is I guess this is definitely a new to me one because it is a GameCube game that only came out in Japan years ago. Mr. Driller Drill Land, which is a game that had this, like, legendary reputation as being this, like, lost GameCube game that stayed in Japan. People would import it and talk about how great it was. And, like, I've played a Mr. Driller game. I was like, it can't be that good. Then I played it when it came out on Switch, and it turns out Mr. Driller Drill Land is that good. It has all these different modes kind of set up as if it was, like, a theme park. And, like, one of them is kind of, like, I forget what the dumb pun is. But you're basically like Indiana Jones going through caverns playing Mr. Driller. And they all have different twists. The music is fantastic. It's a little on the difficult side. That's probably my only knock against it. But it's just super fun to play through everything. I highly recommend it if you want to play. Number 12 is Moon Remix, which... I'm trying to think of how to best say this, is that it's like way more in-depth Majora's Mask before Majora's Mask, to the point of almost absurdity. It has an extremely quirky, weird, bizarre sense of humor. I think the developers basically called it like kind of the anti-RPG, so to speak. So it starts off where... you're a kid playing like an old Super Nintendo RPG. And you play as the hero and going through the world, beating up enemies, you know, beating, you know, the dragon lord or whatever. And then kid beats the game, goes to bed, wakes up, and now they're in the world of the video game. And it turns out that the hero that they played as, that, like, you know, stomped through, like, you know, stole people's stuff when he was going through their bureaus and things, and, like, just hurt a hapless animal on his way to the final boss. Turns out that hero's kind of a dick, just ruining everything. So you go around basically trying to, like, make everybody's life better. And by doing that, you get like love points that then let it, so you can stay up longer without getting tired. And you just have to solve these different quests throughout the world. Some of them also involve, you'll find enemies that the hero killed. Or I guess enemies, they're not enemies. They're enemies in the eyes of the terrible hero. But you have to, you find these animals, and there's like a puzzle to, like, sure, how do you find their spirit to then revive them? And some of that has to do with, like, almost insanely specific daily and weekly schedules. So, like, there's some things where, like, there will be, like, a character, like, I know that there's this whole, I'm not going to say too much about it, but I'll kind of, I guess, lead up to the point of, like, get to this point for the twist. There's a baker in, like, the first castle town that you see, and that baker will just, like, be in the bake shop. Like, you buy bread there very early on. That's one of, like, your first tasks, is your Gramby gives you some money to go buy bread, and, like, you give her the bread. She's like, thanks. And that's a quest that you completed. So you can buy bread from this guy. He, you know, locks up his shop at night and everything. But then there's one night a week that he goes and gets drunk at the bar. And then if you follow him back to the bakery at the end of the night, then you can sneak in and be there after hours with him. And then you will learn something about the baker. But it's stuff like that that just is everywhere. And some of it's like weird quizzes. Some of it's like this guy who, like, it's just really bizarre and weird. And then it goes to even weirder places as you get further into the game. I feel like talking too much specifically about this game ruins some of the flair of it. It definitely is, it's an involved one. You really need to commit to it to kind of learn the ins and outs of everything, because it is, like, Majora's Mask has 3 days. This has a week and, like, way more things that go on at the same time. But I highly recommend it. It is absolutely insane in the best ways. It's a really weird, wild game.
Yeah, this one looked interesting, but I'm scared of it.
Yeah, like, and that's it. Like, I think I even pointed out in my review that, like, if this had any kind of, like, built-in guide functionality or some way to, like, you know, smooth out the rough edges, because this is originally, like, a 1997 PS1 game, and it shows. But it's like, even the thing, like, it came out and people complained about, like, what do I even do in the beginning? And then the developer tweeted being like, we made a PDF of the instruction manual, which is just like, no, like, that doesn't solve the problem, because in order for a person that goes to buy that game to find out about that, they have to go online. They need to find their Twitter, find their website, and then go get the PDF instruction manual. Like,
they have to already be upset.
Yeah. Like, build that into the game. Like, yeah. And it's even, although it is funny, because, like, the Sega Ages stuff, like, I guess, like, you know, reveal behind the curtain, I reviewed some of those Sega Ages games on Switch, and you can go find instruction manuals for those, but it takes you to a website that would not be updated till after those games were out. So, like, there were, I think it was for, like, Itchy Dan R or whatever, which is a game that is not even really, it's not localized in English. So I was like, oh, I could go read the... Oh, no, I can't yet. which, like, I mean, like, at least, like, I still don't think that fixes my issues with that really quirky game that is almost unplayable unless you know Japanese. But at least it's built into the game somewhat. And I hope, like, even I mentioned Collection of Saga, that doesn't really have any instruction manual to kind of give you context for what the hell these games are. And that's what these retro older games need to do, because Like, you can't, you're relying too much on the player having the wherewithal to, like, go do a Google, which, I guess, I mean, is that that tall of an ask? No. But, like, when I'm Googling to find out, you know, like, why did my dude just pass out when I'm playing this game, I'm already, like, down on the game a little bit. Like, thankfully, like, I was already kind of aware of that issue going into this, so it didn't bum me out that much. But, like, I've had that incident with a lot of other older games where it's like, well, like, I don't know what's going on. And then I have to, like, go look at a guide to be like, oh, like, there was something in an instruction manual that told me what to do that I can only find online.
Yeah. Well, it's like when you watch a movie that's based on a book and it has a few plot holes because it skipped over some things. This is a game that's based on a book, and the book is the instruction manual.
Yep. Yeah. Number 11 is I Am Dead, which is a game that has none of those issues, partially because it's a brand new game in 2020. So this is made by I think it's like two different people worked on it. I forget if they worked on all these different things together, but Wilmot's Warehouse, which is a game that I, especially with the stress of this year, it is basically a game where you're just working in a warehouse and trying to like organize and match things and then do deliveries, and it is extremely like frantically zen. But one of the like the person who did Wilmot's Warehouse worked on I Am Dead. Also, they made the game Ho Hokum, which is a really insane, deliriously weird. I think it was PS4 and Vita. That like I kind of wish would like come out on a modern platform, because I really like that game, and would like to play it on something, maybe like a Switch. That would be cool. But I Am Dead is a kind of narrative focused game where you're basically this guy who, you know, spoilers, is dead, and you're on this island, and then you're kind of tasked with like, you need to go figure out what's going on with the island. Like, there's like a volcano that's gonna blow up, I think. And then there's kind of several chapters where you're in different parts of the island and you need to kind of explore the world to find clues that tell you that it's basically, you need to find artifacts for these different people that died. So that way you can like communicate with their ghost and try to, you know, solve other mysteries. But how you do that is you're interacting with the world by like selecting an object and then kind of like zooming in on it in a weird way. That's like kind of hard to explain when not in a visual medium. Like, let me just, I will do the thing I just complained about. Go Google a trailer for I Am Dead, because that'll explain it a little better. But it's kind of like you have this ability to like go through and like use X-ray glasses to like go through layers of items, and you'll like find different secrets in there. Like maybe there's like, you know, something hiding in a box that you have to like zoom into the box and find out the specific part. And it's a really like well-written, fun story. The voice acting is really strong. And like the puzzles are not that tough, but they're enjoyable enough that like, you know, yeah, it's not like I'm like super challenged as to like, what do I do next? But it's a story-based game, so you don't want to have it be where it's like mind-numbingly difficult. But like the puzzles almost provide like just enough resistance to like kind of keep you involved as the story goes along. And it looks visually really, really cute.
Yeah, looking at the... I don't know that I've seen much. I feel like I remember seeing a trailer for this, but...
It was a part of... I think it was the Indie World at the start of the year.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember because I'm seeing a screenshot with a bunch of what are possibly birds wearing pants.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And yeah, it looks bizarre in a very good way. So... I'm going to do Super Punch Patrol, which is a Bertel Horberg game, who is the gentleman who did the Gunman Clive games and Extermination Force, which if you haven't played, is low-key maybe one of like my top, I don't know, 20 games on Switch. It's really, really good.
It might be a better Cuphead game than Cuphead.
Yeah, and by might be, I mean it is.
Yeah, and it sucks because they came out around the same time, but like one of them was a Microsoft-backed indie world game, and the other one was like one dude in a treehouse. Like,
yeah, Mextermination Force, which is not what we're talking about, but Mextermination Force is like 2D Shadow of the Colossus You play as
the dude from Contra.
It controls similarly to like Contra or something. Yeah. And it's so, so good. So Extermination Force, he had a little bit of a team doing that. That game didn't do great. And he is now kind of back to doing stuff on his own. And so where he seems to be now is doing these weird experiments where he just makes, like, he picks a genre and just dives into that genre and makes a game in that genre. That's kind of like a smaller, but he would say it's a smaller experience. I say it's still a pretty sizable game, and then sells it for like $2 or $3. But Super Punch Patrol is a Streets of Rage style beat 'em up. And it's very, very good. This guy has an ability to pick a genre and just do it better than most of, like, the much higher budget games in that genre do it. And he just gets it. And his games have a great sense of humor, and they're weird. And, like, everybody in Super Punch Patrol... tons of people in like denim shorts riding on skateboards. It's very aware of what its inspiration is. There's a level where you're on like a rocket propelled skateboard going across a bridge, and everybody else is also on rocket propelled skateboards. So ultimately nothing changes. The background is just scrolling as you go around fighting guys. Like, it's the gameplay doesn't change at all. It's just a change to the environment, but everybody's on rocket propelled skateboards. And it's just great. And that's the level of just absurd, stupid fun. And like I said, it's like a couple bucks. So
yeah,
just
I want to say it's like $5. I bought it sight unseen because I wanted to support the dude. I have not played it yet.
Yeah. It's really good. I know he posted on Twitter of like maybe a week ago, a demo of Gunman Clive running around from a Resident Evil 4 perspective, and he was like, maybe I'll do this, and I'm like, please, yeah, do it,
just make Mercenaries but with Gunman Clive.
Yeah, well, and there's like a couple random levels in Gunman Clive where you're riding on a dinosaur and it's just a Star Fox game.
Yeah,
and so every time he's like, what should I do next, I'm like, dude, just make more of those levels, please, thank you. But yeah, he's great. Buy his games. And then I'll also throw in Doom Eternal, which I've talked about before. It's good. I have some issues with it, but when it stops trying to tell me a weirdly complicated story and just is Doom and lets me shoot at demons, my God, that the modern Doom formula is so good. And it's, easily one of the best first-person shooters that's currently out there. And the Switch port is very impressive, I say, as I'm wearing my Panic Button t-shirt.
Sell out.
So I'm totally objective. Yeah. Yeah, I'm a shill for Panic Button now, officially. But yeah, it's... You know Panic Button. They take games that shouldn't run on Switch and then make them run on Switch, and it doesn't make any sense. But boy, are they good at it. My one real gripe about this game is that the multiplayer is terrible as compared to the original's multiplayer, which was pretty much like a Quake-style just arena shooter. Now it's a weird asymmetric thing and reminds me of Zombie U, and you don't want to be reminded of Zombie U very often.
Yeah. Zombie U was really good. It's just that the Wii U.
Zombie U is fine. The multiplayer isn't the thing I remember it for.
The multiplayer wasn't that great. I feel like the idea of the multiplayer was cool. It was just the execution.
The same idea, but now there's two people spawning zombies. So if that was your problem with the Zombie U multiplayer, then good news. They fixed that. But the rest of Doom Eternal is awesome.
So can we hook up Panic Button with, like, what is it, Back for Blood? The new, like, Left 4 Dead game by the Left 4 Dead people?
Oh, sure.
I would like to play Back... Sure. I would like to cover Back for Blood on Nintendo World Report.
Can we just fund it?
Yeah.
How much money do they
need? All right, guys, we got, like, $25. Can you make the game?
Make it happen. Also, I'll take Everspace 2 if you're not too busy. Thank you.
No, like, it sucks because I love the idea of that kind of, like, the director, like, the DM, so to speak, in, like, that zombie-like environment. Like, I played so much stinking Left 4 Dead back in the day. I would like a fun experience like that again.
Yeah. They could just port Left 4 Dead 1 and 2 to Switch.
I don't even know who owns the rights. Is it?
It's Valve, isn't it? It is
Valve, yeah.
Yeah. So it will never, I don't think it'll ever happen.
Yeah, Valve needs to remember they can make games.
Hey, they made Half-Life Alyx.
That feels like it was like, they're like, should we do this? Yeah, let's troll people.
Yeah. Well, that was because they needed to support their VR. Yeah. Yeah, and the fate of the Half-Life series hung on how well Half-Life Alyx did.
Which makes perfect
sense. Which, actually, I think it did fine. Yeah. For a VR.
And I think people really liked it. Like, whenever I...
Yeah, suppose it's very good. I my only VR is a PlayStation VR and a Labo. So, and weirdly, it doesn't support Labo VR. It so I don't know. Should, that caught me off guard. But I had to return my copy when I realized it wouldn't work. But
I wonder if Breath of the Wild 2 is going to run on Labo.
That's a great question.
If
it does, I hope it's better.
Like, I mean, I feel like I haven't been in the position to actually ask a meaningful interview question to anyone at Nintendo since, like, E3 2013. But if I, for some fluky reason in the next year, have the ability to ask a question of, like, anybody at Nintendo about Breath of the Wild 2, my question might be, will this support Labo VR?
They just kick you out. Yeah, let's just tweet, like, at them.
That's just Miyamoto just points to the door. I mean, not that it'll be in person.
No, Miyamoto turns to the other guy and goes, I told you.
Yeah.
People want it.
Yeah. No, that would be, because I would imagine this would be like a Zoom call because, like, we ain't having E3 this year, I think. Hope not. It'll be a Zoom call that I just get kicked out of. And my virtual background, my actual background right now is literally like a master sword and a Hylian shield hanging on the wall. So maybe they wouldn't kick me out right away, but they probably would.
Hang the Labo VR next to it. your turn.
All right.
Because I gotta ration my games.
All right. I got 10 through 6 as we're in the top 10. Number 10 is Final Fantasy VII Remake, which is a game
that's not a Nintendo game.
Well, then you're not going to like my number
one. We only talk about Nintendo on this
podcast. You're not going to like my number one. Anyway, uh-oh. Final Fantasy VII Remake, which I will say, for the purposes of this podcast, I hope comes to Xbox Series X in 2021.
And on Game Pass, hopefully.
Yeah, so my story of woe with Final Fantasy VII Remake, or I guess maybe it's the story of maybe my PS4 died at the right time. I forget exactly how far I was in the game. I think it was like just getting to like the Shinra Tower or something like that. My PS4 died. It was like 15, 20 hours in this game. But I will say it was at the point where I'm like, maybe the combat's getting a little long in the tooth. So I wound up like watching Let's Plays of the rest of the game because I just, like, I had to know. And I was very thrilled and happy with the preposterousness of the story of that game. You can listen to me talk about it on an episode of The Thirsty Mage from, like a month or so after the game came out or something. But I really, really like Final Fantasy VII Remake. That's why I hope that it comes to, you know, PC, or if I have maybe my new laptop can run it and not blow up. I hope it comes to Xbox, because then I'll be able to play it without fear of my PlayStation 4 crashing and then eventually just dying altogether. Because I really like that game and I can't wait to see what dumb things they do to ruin it. I think I feel like there's inflection points with me with Star Wars that can be compared to Final Fantasy VII Remake. I feel like the end of Final Fantasy VII Remake is something akin to the end of The Mandalorian Season 2, or maybe the end of The Force Awakens. With The Force Awakens, that kind of had a bad end. That's honestly what I expect Final Fantasy VII Remake to be like, but I'll be optimistic. And it's also like very Kingdom Heartsy, which is another series that I was super into at one point in my life, and then by the time 3 came out, I was like, I don't care. but I'm down for the ride. It's gonna be dumb. Number 9, which I feel like might be on your list. My number 9 game of the year is Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity.
That was not on my list because I didn't review it, so I forgot.
So Age of Calamity, I think, is a fantastic game that, if it didn't have technical issues, would be higher on my list. It is super fun. You know, kind of talked about it recently on the show, so maybe I won't go into so much detail. It's just a really well-designed Musou. I love how different the characters feel. I like the weird timey-wimey-ness of the overall story. And it's just a really fun game that I look forward to playing more of at some point in my life.
Yeah, I have nothing fresh to add on Hyrule Warriors, but it is good and I like it.
My number 8 and my second highest Nintendo game is Animal Crossing New Horizons, which I have a lot of issues with Animal Crossing New Horizons. I think crafting, especially tool crafting, sucks. I think there's still a lot of UI stuff, like the fact that you can't craft from your storage, even when you're in your house, which is just kind of asinine. And there's a lot of quirks like that that you know, they've kind of, they take one step forward and two steps back with a lot of the UI item management stuff. But overall, it's just a really well-made game. There's a reason why it took the world by storm. And I put a buttload of time into it, largely because, you know, I had a bunch of friends that got into it. My wife got really into it. So it was just a thing that we played together during the pandemic. And for that, I really enjoyed my time with Animal Crossing. I'll probably go back to it periodically. I think the last time I really played it was on Thanksgiving. And that was some of the holiday stuff. That's been fun. And I hope they keep on adding things, because what I do miss a lot from this game is all the weird Nintendo shit that would show up in it. I want to wear Samus's mask and play a Game Boy and play a Puzzle League thing. I miss all that stuff. And I will say that I think Nintendo made a very, financially smart decision in making the base game less Nintendo weird. It's a very weird game still, but they don't have that for lack of a better term, the Nintendo fanboy flourishes of here's your Nintendo gift of the day. Do you get the Mario hat? That's not there. And I miss that as a Nintendo fanboy. I miss that. But I understand, because it makes the overall game so much more approachable to the average player.
Yeah. Yeah, I hadn't really even thought about that, but you're right. It has a different tone to it because of that. Somehow that game is... Nintendo did their, see what your most played games are. Somehow that game was my most played game of the year, and I haven't been able to find my cartridge since about 2 months after it came out. So apparently I played a whole lot of it within those first 2 months. But I don't know how much, because Nintendo won't tell me. I suspect one of my nephews or nieces may have my cartridge. If you're listening to this podcast,
USOB,
please give it back.
it's really good. There are a lot, most of the criticism of the game I get, but I will make the criticism too, but it's still good for what it is. Community, that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
Number 7 is a game that is not about community, because it's a single-player game, but it's a great game nonetheless. It came out before the world went sideways. That game is Kunai, which is a side-scrolling Metroidvania game with a really, kind of unique, monochrome-y art style that I think, really pops, and the animation's great. And you essentially play as a little tablet named Tabby that has Kunai that turns him into tablet robot Spider-Man. And you go around and, find new areas, fight enemies, fight bosses, get new power-ups, get new abilities, all that jazz. It's a really stinking good game. Refer to my review. It's been 10 months since I played it, and a lot has happened.
Yeah, some of these that I bring up, I have to really think about. I'm like, what did I like about this game? apparently I liked it.
Yeah, like I've actually, when I was finalizing going through this list, oh, I didn't totally finalize it because I moved Windbound up after talking about it more. I actually rewatched my Kunai video review and was like, ah, okay. Like that's why that game worked for me. All right, good to know.
Yeah.
I like
that's
having
why,
that.
That's why I have OpenCritic open. Yeah. You can just see the summary.
My number six is another game like that, that I like went back to be like, what do I love about this game again? Murder by Numbers is my number six. That came out back in March. That is, you know, number one Picross game on the list. It's essentially you could kind of say it's Ace Attorney meets Picross, but it's just a visual novel crossed with Picross. Cause there's not as much like courtroom stuff, even if you are solving murders and stuff. Like it's a lot more of like there's the exploration phase of Phoenix Wright, and I feel like there's an important part of Phoenix Wright, which is like you're in court, that this does not have. But what this does have is the composer from Phoenix Wright, so that is why I feel like people fall into the it's Ace Attorney meets Picross, because it sounds like it. But I really really love that game, and I highly recommend it because it is just like a really. It's a really weird out there story with a lot of characters that are turned to 11. And the Picross is good too, which is always important. And I just like, I love it because it's just like, it's like, all right, it's like Leighton-esque in that you're like, all right, I'm going to go like, look at this environment. Oh, this reminds me of a Picross puzzle. so that now I'm down to my top five. So I don't know how we want to do this for dramatic effect.
So I'm going to throw in one, and then you do three more, get up to your top two, and then we can alternate.
All right. Sounds good.
Because I have a top two. So my next one is Oceanhorn 2.
Oh, I've been kind of wanting to check that one out.
It's okay. So it's a Zelda game that reminds me of a Mana game, which is weird because so as a kid people always told me to play the Mana games because like, if you like Zelda you'll like Mana. Not true. I didn't like most of the Mana games, but Oceanhorn 2 is like what I would have imagined that was when people told me that. It's just Zelda with a little bit more JRPG flavor to it, and it's very fun. It was originally an Apple Arcade game, and I think the fact that it was designed for a handheld architecture kind of shows it's beautiful and runs super well on Switch and has, like, no loading time. Like, the loading times are so short. Even booting it up, it just immediately starts.
That's impressive.
Which is impressive because it's, like, a big semi-open world game. But it's one of the most technically impressive games I've played on Switch in a long time. But if you have a hankering for like good 3D Zelda with just a little bit more, like you have it's 3D Zelda if you had a party. So I guess more like Four Swords Adventures, but like the party is useful and will engage in combat, but then you can like give them orders while you're doing puzzles to like go interact with a thing while you're interacting with something else, and that'll feature into a lot of the puzzle design. And it's great. And was a big surprise. I had like never heard of it until I think we got a code for it.
Yeah, I think it was like, oh, it's coming out next
week.
Saw
the trailer and was like, yeah, and it was like, oh, this looks incredible, and then played it. I never played the first one. This is apparently a prequel to the first one.
I don't remember liking the first one that much. I think that was one of those like 2D Zelda-y games that was very block puzzle heavy.
Yes. Yeah, the first one didn't appeal to me, but this one, as a prequel, you don't need to know the story to the first one. At this point, I probably will at some point, if the first one's on sale, pick it up just for the sake of... I'm interested in the story a little bit. But yeah, it's a fantastic game. Play it, you will be impressed. Yeah, give me three more games, Neil.
All right. I'm curious. With my top five, do you want to take a random stab at what my top five could be? I will hear you say it and I will not give it away.
Okay. I think I have a guess at what your top one might be. But I'm pretty confident that the Tony Hawk games have to be in this list somewhere. Probably towards the top, if not on the top. And then, did Madden happen this year? There's got to be a Madden game in there, I assume.
So Madden, I would almost put in like the port honorable mention thing, because I will say, that's for fair. As much as I've been playing Madden this year, like it's a shitty game. if you noticed anything from like, I think it was back like it was like maybe the month before the game came out, where like Madden fans got very mad. Or no, I think it was like I think this was like the lowest reviewed version of Madden in years. And people were very mad because they haven't updated the franchise mode that much. It's the kind of thing where I see that, and like I play a lot of Madden and everything, but I like look at the criticism. I'm like, oh, they're not wrong. Yeah. I get that people have issues with Madden, but I still get what I want out of it.
Yeah. What was that game that you reviewed that you really liked?
I will say that you're probably right.
Cardo. I'll bet Cardo's one of these. Cardo's probably one of them.
So I will say Carto is number four.
Okay.
Yeah, like that game blew me away.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember you being super high on
it. Yeah, like I think it showed up in like, was it like a wholesome indie direct or something? And I was like, well, that looks kind of cute. Yeah. And then saw that it was coming out in like 2 weeks. And then, like, we got an email that was like, do you want to review Cardo? And I was like, yes. And, it's a pretty, like, it's like a simple concept that just takes it to a really, in a really nice direction. So, like, you basically, like, get this, you're a character who has this power to kind of, like, move tiles around and change the way the world works. So like if you're familiar with the game Carcassonne at all, that's how I use that in my review to explain it. So you can like you get new tiles or you rearrange other tiles to like solve puzzles and you know make things better for people, you know, find your way forward and everything. And the puzzles are exceedingly clever. There's like a really, it's got good writing, a nice narrative throughout. It's got like some like really like cute like Lost Woodsy kind of things in it too. And it just kind of keeps on building, and it surprised me with it was one of those games that I thought was like, okay, this is probably the end, and then it kept going longer, but in a good way. Where it was like, oh, like that'd be kind of a bummer if it was this short, and then it kept going. I'm like, oh, it just got even better. I highly recommend it. It's on Xbox Game Pass. I think it's also on the PC version of that too. Highly recommend playing that game. It's, you know, a couple hours long, but it's very worthwhile. So that was my number four. I'll be honest, probably as I play more of Dicey Dungeons, which is my number five, Dicey Dungeons might top Cardo. I realize because the Switch has now told me how much time I put into Dicey Dungeons, I'm over 10 hours into Dicey Dungeons. I'm probably not even halfway through the content in the game. Dicey Dungeons is fucking incredible. It's hard to put into words. But Dicey Dungeons is a roguelike dungeon crawler of sorts, where you basically like go through different floors, but it's a point-to-point map where it'll be, you know, battles or treasure chests or stores or stuff. The way it works is that like there are six different classes, like warrior, thief, witch, robot. And you have different, like, equipment that then you roll dice, and then depending on what the dice are, you can place that on the equipment. Like, some of the stuff is, you know, it's just, like, how, you know, you put a four that you rolled on it, you do four damage. There might be some that, like, oh, it requires, a four or higher to trigger some poison damage on the opponent or something like that. And it's a bunch of turn-based battles that play out with that. But it's just, like, a very kind of lightweight and smart roguelike. In that there's that ability to kind of build up a lot of fun synergies. Like I got like, I think I had an enemy at like 20 poison at one point. So that's the kind of thing where like you do poison and then when it's their turn, 20 hit points of damage happens. And that's just kind of building it up because I would have like stacked powers and abilities that would like then, you know, do a lot of poison damage, then double the poison and stuff like that. And all the different classes are super distinct and unique. Like the warrior is just kind of straightforward, you know, beating up people. And then there's like the robot has this thing where you have like you basically roll the dice, and if you hit the jackpot, which you know will increase as you level up, but like I think it starts off at like 9. So if I were to roll like 3 threes and get to 9 on the dot, then I'd hit jackpot and get to use a bonus attack. If I were to go over that, then like all my other abilities just wash away. So it's like that cool risk reward with some of the classes.
Yeah.
And like every class is different, and then it's not just the typical runs going through the classes either, because you'll kind of have like an introductory run through it with a class, and then after you beat some of those runs, then you'll unlock 5 other episodes per class. And those will be stuff where like there's one where when you level up you lose hit points. So it kind of got to this point where usually you kind of want to max leveling up before you fight the boss, but I was like, wait a minute, I kind of want to skip some battles and only do the ones that are required, because then I won't lose, I'll have more hit points. And some other things where it'll be like you'll get to use like the super upgraded version of every equipment, but you'll start every battle with the, or every turn with the status effect cursed, where if you take an attack, there's like a 50% chance that it might fail. And just a lot of things like that to just tweak how you approach the game. And at this point, I think I've done like I'm about halfway through it. I've done like 3 of the episodes per character, and each one just feels so distinct and unique. And it's kind of like just slowly adding more. Like I keep on learning new things every time I play a different episode in that game, and it all it's very additive. Like things that I learned in other battles and other runs will help me out as I kind of build the synergies and learn more of the cards that show up.
Yeah.
Dicey Dungeons is really stinking good. My number three
I have the soundtrack for it on my
is a very good soundtrack.
Spotify game soundtrack.
Yeah, and I guess
Yeah.
I hope that sold you on it. It's by Terry Cavanagh, who did VVV
Yeah.
VVV, which is I still think one of the best games of the past decade, like hands down.
Yeah.
My number three, which I'm actually surprised you did not guess this game, or the number two game for that matter.
I do have another guess for you, but I won't say it because I'm very confident in it and I don't want to give it away.
My number three is Paper Mario: The Origami King. This was a game that I think at different points of the year, like it might have been lower, it might have been even higher, but I kind of settled on this like this three spot for it because I don't even really dislike the battle system. Like I feel like I almost
Yeah.
said that to like just pose with everybody else and try to be cool. I just love that video game. Like everything about it kind of works for me. Like visually it's gorgeous, the music's fantastic. I really love exploring the worlds. I like that it's a little bit more open worldy than the past couple Paper Marios. Like as I've talked about, I've retroactively come around on Color Splash. And I think that there's something that really, you know, pops with the fact that the world is more expansive in Origami King. Looking around those worlds for like the different hidden toads and other secrets, like I had a lot of fun. I haven't 100%ed everything, but like the first couple areas, I like almost like I enjoyed scouring every corner of the world to just see what was there. The battle system is definitely the weakest point, but for me, I just think it's like, and I get why people would just be like, well, why is it even there in the first place? But as you kind of
Yeah.
get through the game, it's pretty easy to avoid if you don't want to do battles. Like it's just kind of like you're in environments where it's just like there's an enemy there. I can just walk around him very easily, and only
Yeah.
do the battles that are necessary. Because it is like some of those other Paper Mario games where like you kind of don't have to do the battles to like get better. Like there's like some that you know ones that you have to do, and I found the battles to be fun because it's not a quick like, all right, it's you know strategic battle stuff. Like it's just a puzzle. You're just doing a puzzle, and then like hitting a button with rhythm to do the attack, because you're just you know aligning the ring and everything. And some of the puzzles get really hard later on. Like it is challenging. And I guess well we've gotten an hour and 40 minutes into this, so a lot of people probably aren't even listening to this thing, so I'll say my hot take about Paper Mario's battle system and a lot of other complicated battle systems. A lot of RPG people that have criticized Origami King's battle system sure seem like they like really basic battle systems where you just mash the A button and not think. Yeah, I mean, it's the kind of thing where, like, don't get me wrong, like, I like playing Final Fantasy VII as well, but, like, there's something about Paper Mario kind of, like, attacking my brain in a different way with its battle system. That, and it's like,
yeah, trying to do something new.
Yeah, why I really like Little Town Hero. It's also the connective tissue of Paper Mario and Moon Remix. The writer who worked on Moon Remix is like one of the lead guys on Paper Mario and has been for Color Splash as well. It's a I forget his name, but he's at Vanpool. He's been at Vanpool for a while. Probably also responsible a little bit for the insanity that is the third Dylan's Rolling Western game that is just like Mad Max.
That's a franchise we need a dark, gritty reboot of.
I mean, they did it. And then there's also like weird me's as animals. It's funny because I hate the first Dylan's Rolling Western. Like, hate it. Like, I think I gave it a 4 out of 10 when it came out. And then, like, the third one, like, I think we had an interview opportunity. It was really cool because I got to interview, like, Tanabe and stuff. And I was just like, all right, like, I'll play this for this interview. Like, maybe it'll be good. And, like, the game's really stinking good. Like, it is a far cry from that first Dylan's Rolling Western. Like, they made it fantastic. And it's a damn shame that came out in, like, 2018 on 3DS or whatever. Digital only in North America. Because no one played that game. And yeah, I think it came out for, like, $40, too. But it's really good. And so is Paper Mario the Origami King. I like it, all the kind of ill will about it not being the Thousand Year Door remake everybody wants. Like, it just kind of sucks because Origami King on its own merits is tremendous. It's just that it's not exactly what everybody wanted. And I think I've gotten to the point where I'm a firm believer of I'd rather have people in Nintendo make things that they're passionate about as opposed to just making the thing that popular opinion wants.
Yeah, and I mean, do you really want to be in a world where we have to remake Thousand Year Door every couple generations, or can we just make new games instead?
Yeah, like that's I wish Nintendo made Thousand Year Door more accessible, because it is kind of like lost on GameCube at this point, and it's actually funny. I think I looked at it recently that like Thousand Year Door, you could get it for like $10 in like 2010. And now it's like going for like
it's
80.
Expensive now.
I looked at like I think it was like the history on like price charting or something, and it's just like from like a year, like basically from the Wii launch to like the Wii U launch, it's like $10 to $15, and then probably around maybe it's around when Sticker Star came out or Color Splash came out, it just like skyrockets to like 40, and now it's like going for like 70 or 80 now.
I mean, that's the GameCube library in general.
Yeah, it's all surging right now.
GameCube is crazy expensive.
But I like all 5 of the Paper Mario games.
Are there 6?
Yes.
Is that a joke?
Yes.
Okay.
I actually had to think about, like, I was like, are there 5 or are there 6? No, I think Sticker...
Are you counting Paper Jam?
I think Sticker Star is an absolute trash fire of a game, and I think all the other 5 have redeeming qualities with, you know, pros and cons to all of them. I think, I don't know, like I almost feel like I need to replay Thousand Year Door to see where I'd put that on my list. I think as of playing Origami King, it's recency bias, but I think Origami King would be my favorite Paper Mario game. 2 and 3 would assuredly be 64 and Thousand Year Door. I don't know the order. I actually think I might like the more straightforward, non-backtracking nature of 64. There's a, like, the Fisher-Price RPG nature of Paper Mario 64 is really charming. That's one that I played with the kid a couple hours with earlier this year. Super Paper Mario is probably the bottom. I don't think it's terrible. I just don't think it's as good. And then Color Splash would be above that.
I will, since you shared your RPG hot take, my hot take is that I played Sticker Star when it came out, and I thought it was about as bad as all the other Paper Mario games. So I've never understood. I tend to almost default to a Sticker Star defender stance, not because I think it's good, but because I think it's just as boring as the other ones.
That's fair. I was.
I don't feel like it deserves the hate.
I saw because I think I forget who it was that like shared a tweet of there was like a Reset Era thread or something of people demanding for the Snyder cut, the Nomura cut of Final Fantasy 15. And it was something about like oh look what we started, and I replied being like, but I want to see the non Miyamoto cut of Sticker Star. Because like there isn't Iwata asks, yeah. That is it's wild because it's basically just the developers on Sticker Star being like, yeah, we had partners and shit, and then Miyamoto came in like 4 months before the game came out and was like, yeah, that's gotta go. like it's Sticker yeah. Star at one point in development was going to be the Paper Mario RPG that I think everybody wanted, and then Miyamoto came and was just like, nope. The battles can't be that there are no partners. The battles have to be pointless. Like it's crazy. It sucks because I think that there's a world where Sticker Star is a game that I don't hate.
Yeah.
The music's really good.
Music is good. It looks nice.
Yeah.
It is a visually pleasing game. It was the game I think that introduced the realistic, like the weirdly realistic objects.
Yeah. Which is a trip that I appreciate. So it
gets credit for that. Yeah. It's without Sticker Star, we wouldn't have the painfully realistic lemons of Color Splash. let's see. Was that your three?
Yeah, that was my three.
Okay. I'll do my two, which is Embracelet.
Oh.
Which is a small adventure game, I suppose. Made by one dude, and it came at me totally out of nowhere. I believe I took the review code because it was low poly, and I like low poly art styles. And then I wound up playing through the entire thing in a single sitting. It's around 4 hours long or so. I started it kind of late, but I was like, I need to stay up. Because I was so engaged with it. It's you play as a kid whose grandfather gives him this weird bracelet that allows him to manipulate the world around him. And then his grandpa says, hey, you should go to the island where I grew up. And then his grandpa dies. And so you have this weird bracelet and your grandpa telling you to go to an island. And so you do. And you go there for, I think, your 18th birthday. And it's a really cool coming of age story where like this kid is getting to know the other people on this very remote island and making friends while also learning about his grandfather's childhood from the people who still live there, who knew his grandpa's family and all that. And then there's also some puzzles and stuff and figuring out what the bracelet is. And it's just enthralling. And I absolutely loved it. I think I gave it a 9 out of 10, and it's just a crazy good game, and I can't recommend it enough.
Yeah, that's one that after you spoke so highly of it, I definitely was like, maybe I need to check that out at some point. It's not like, I need to be in the right mood for a game like that, but it might be the kind of thing that I keep an eye out for a sale and wait for that right mood to strike.
It's a game where, you buy it and then maybe wait for an evening where you can just relax and do it in a sitting.
Yeah.
Cause it's not difficult. It's very much, you always know where you're going. There's some puzzles, but nothing you're really going to get stuck on. It's like, Journey or Rhyme or any of those games where it's much more about telling an atmospheric story than it is about being challenging, or To the Moon or something like that. I compared it to The Moon when I was talking to Joe DeVader. I know he purchased it and I think he finished it. I should ask him if he liked it. He didn't say anything, so he he probably hated it because he didn't say really that he liked it. So, okay, good. and the guy that made it seems nice. I've talked to him on Twitter a few times, and he seems nice. So that's good.
All right. So my number two, I think this might have been the game that you were thinking about, Super Mega Baseball 3.
That is the game I was thinking about.
Yeah, that is my number two. This is actually one kind of like Paper Mario, where like as I thought about it throughout the year, I realized like where could it be other than at number two? I think I had it lower at one point because there was a part of me that's like, I gave Super Mega Baseball 2 a 10 out of 10 when it came out, and I can't really imagine how they could have made it better. And they did make it a little better, but it was also kind of more the same. I wound up giving the third one a 9.5 out of 10, but it's the best baseball game I've ever played. Like, I am a broken record at this point. There are countless ways, I guess there's one way. There's like a really good free demo that you can like play a substantial amount of online content in the game with, and I mean check it out. It's even if you're not a big baseball fan, I think it's still a really approachable and fun game. I love it, so it's the best.
I am not a baseball fan, but I did download that demo and I did play it. And it was pleasant. I'm very bad at it and got destroyed, but it was pleasant.
Yeah, there was like 2 days where we were like, let's start an online league. And we had a good night. And then I think Super Mario 35 came out the next day. So it just nuked our plans.
There's been a couple times. There's a few Discord channels that I can see right now that were the result of one night of, let's do this.
We should play Among Us, guys.
It never actually happens again. We should play Among Us. Do you guys, let's play, email connectivity at NintendoWorldReport.com if you want to play Among Us.
I still have not played it because I've been waiting.
It's cross-platform. You can play it for free on your phone.
Yeah, I've been waiting to play it with friends. Just that the opportunity hasn't happened. But anyway, what's your number one?
My number one, which I don't think is a surprise if you've been paying attention to me this year, it's Rebel Galaxy Outlaw. It's an open world space combat and trucking simulator where you take on jobs and haul goods to various space stations and planets, or you can take on jobs hunting down pirates or defending convoys. Sometimes you'll be flying along and there will be a distress signal and you can go answer it or not. It has a karma system based on what your actions are, and depending on how you play the game, you'll have access to different stations and planets. If you play it lawfully, then you won't have any trouble with law enforcement, and so you'll be able to go to the more civilized planets, like the upper class stuff. And if you're a pirate, you'll be able to get into the pirate stuff. And if you wind up somewhere you're not supposed to be, you're going to get shot at. But if you're good, you could still fight your way through. And it's gorgeous, and it runs really well on Switch, which is surprising for how good it looks. And it's great. And it's pretty much just everything I like about the more open-ended Wing Commander games, with a little hint of some Star Wars, some Firefly, and some No Man's Sky. And it is just the game for me. And I am very happy it's out on Switch. Every time it goes on sale on Steam, I consider double dipping as an excuse to play it even more than I already do. This is also my second most played game after Animal Crossing for the year, which is... I think it's not often that an indie game manages to have enough content for it to get that high in my my playtime list. But I don't, once again, because the Switch is terrible at tracking playtime, I don't know how much time I've put into this, but I know it's a lot.
my number one is not a Switch game. I hope it comes to Switch someday, because I will go find the Game Explain review, the script that I did for it, and just write it for here. No. it's Tony Hawk's Pro
Skater. So was that?
Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 and 2 that I played.
Yeah, I was right.
I played on Xbox One. And I have played it on Series X, and yes, it does run better on it. They did it. I feel like I've been wanting this game to happen for 15 years, and they did it, and it's perfect. Like, I played a lot of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater HD, which was bad. I played a lot of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 5, which was even worse. And because I just wanted that feeling. Like, it's a very specific feeling that weirdly a lot of the current skateboarding games don't go for. Like, even the skate games are mm-hmm. fine. Like, I've enjoyed mm-hmm. the skate games, but they go for realism. Whereas the thing with Tony Hawk and like going through playing, you know, the remakes here, I also, before they were even announced, I hacked my PlayStation Classic to put on Tony Hawk 1, 2, and 3 on that, and like played through those over the course of a couple nights. The thing that makes those games magical is that, like, it's, yeah, there's the high score element, and then you're kind of just like completing quests. And it's kind of all about play. It's okay if you fail. Like, it's just like, it's okay if you fall on the ground. You can still hit these boxes over the course of a 2-minute run. And it's something about that made it so approachable when I first played that game on PlayStation, you know, 20 plus years ago, and it blew my mind. Like, I was not good at that game when I first played it, but it was just so much fun to play with the music and the level design and everything, and seeing those original levels kind of brought back in such beautiful ways with more objectives, with like more stuff to do, all these different challenges that you can do for every skater. And the feel of it is just perfect. Like, my only real complaint is that there's some online multiplayer that you can kind of just like hang out on a level, and like it'll have like, oh, like it's a whoever can get the best trick in the next minute. It was random people only, but they had an update that made it you could do it with friends, which like that was like almost literally my only complaint with the game. Is that I wish there was friend multiplayer, and then they added it. I just hope this is the start of more good Tony Hawk games, because like really, I it's hard for me to I think I did as I referenced at the start of this. There's a video review over at Game Explain that I did the narration and you know wrote and everything. I tried to put it into words how much this game like just nailed it for me and how much it means to me. And I hope I came close to laying it out, because I can't think of a game that I could have told you that I wanted this game multiple years ago and be like, oh, but it'll never happen. But it did, and it's perfect.
Yeah, that it happened and it happened well.
Yeah.
Is impressive given the recent history of that franchise. But maybe this is a sign of things to come, and
I hope
they'll make more games like this.
I'll play it on Switch, even if it's janky.
Yeah. Well, this is it's active. Who is the developer on it?
Vicarious Visions.
Was it? Oh right, duh. Yeah. There's hope.
Yeah. I mean, Activision has done late ports to Switch in the past, so.
Yeah, I mean, we've got Crash and Spyro.
Yeah.
Are those both Activision, or is just Spyro?
They both are.
They both are. Okay. Yeah, so there's some precedent for that. And yeah, I mean, you could dumb down the graphics on this quite a bit before it would look worse than the N64 version, so there's plenty of room to still call it a remaster.
But yeah, that's the 30 games that I liked in 2020.
And those were the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 games that I quickly scrolled through that had 8s or higher on my Open Critic profile from this year.
I hope this was enjoyable. Auld Lang Syne, Happy New Year. Well, I guess we'll have to figure out what we're doing with the next episode, but that'll be next year. So,
yeah, we've got a lot of time before then. Yeah. Our goal is to do more than 4 episodes next year.
Yeah.
I think we can do it.
I think this one will even technically come out next year.
Oh,
My God, you're right.
But we recorded it.
Welcome to the first episode of 2021. Whoops.
But I'm trying to think what January 8th or January 6th is when we'd be recording. I don't know. We'll figure out what we're going to talk about. Maybe we'll just talk about Star Wars again, or maybe.
Hopefully things will probably start to happen. But everything's really quiet right now. All the developers and PR places are home for the holidays. Isn't a lot.
Yeah, maybe we'll talk some you know, pick a Nintendo topic. Maybe be like what do we think 2021 is going to be. We'll figure it out. Yeah. If you have any ideas, dear listener, email them over to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. We did have a listener mail about Star Wars that we'll get to next time, because this took a while. We had a lot of games to get through. But we're gonna keep doing stuff, and we'll have guests on and stuff like that, and keep marching towards I guess when Mario 3D World comes out.
Yeah.
All right.
And then I'll hate it.
All right.
And everyone will love it. Well, goodbye, everyone.